I love what Ruth was talking about with the inauguration and what Sean was singing about. We're really talking about choices. I mean, that's what life is about, and that's what I've been talking about this month. And it's hard to believe we're already at the fourth Sunday of the January series and the basic principles of this. I mean, it always comes so fast to me at the end. But I always wonder if I have gotten the point across to you guys that this makes sense, that this stuff is real, that it applies, that you can use it in your life, and it's very, very simple. This idea that we can choose where we focus our attention, and over the last, you know, a couple of weeks, we've had the opportunity to focus on some things like 2 million people standing up ready for change, not violent change like is going on in the rest of the world, but a simple change of consciousness that will allow everything to come from it. And some people have asked, because I spent a lot of years flying commercial aircraft, what did I think of that thing in New York the other day? That's something for us to focus on. The possibility is there, not focusing on fear and tragedy and accidents and all those things. So when I first came here and I first started hearing this message that is really getting out all over the world, one of the things I wondered is, why don't more people understand this? Why don't more people believe this? Why isn't there a center like this in every major city in the country? Because there's not. There really isn't, and there should be, because these messages that we talk about, these principles that I've talked about this month, seem to be so new and so different and so powerful. I mean, and then we give it the name New Thought, but it's not new. None of this stuff is new. Now, it's new compared to what a lot of people have heard or what many of us heard growing up in our traditional teachings, but the only thing new about this is that now more and more people are starting to pay attention. They're starting to understand what it really means. Because throughout history, there have always been men and women who understood these same principles, and they used these principles to enjoy their life, and they also shared with others the good news, the message of love and joy and peace and prosperity and health and creativity, all of these different things as the way that we're meant to live. Now, if you look back in history, it's easy to tell who these people were, because those were the people who were primarily responsible for almost all the positive growth that took place in the world. Those people were not just the Jesuses and the Buddhas and the Mohammeds and these people. They were the inventors. They were the explorers. They were the thinkers. They were the artists. They were the teachers. They were people like Thomas Edison and Helen Keller and Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi and Magellan and Harriet Tubman, all these different people who took these principles and applied them in their life. In fact, if there had not been a significant number of people throughout history who thought this way, you know, with the idea of consciously and deliberately and intelligently moving forward, taking chances, trying new things, boldly going where no one has gone before, you know, that if there weren't people who did that through the years, the human race would have destroyed itself a long, long time ago. Now, 2,500 years ago, the Buddha wrote, "All that we are is the result of what we have thought. The mind is everything. What we think, we become." 2,500 years ago. 2,000 years ago, Marcus Aurelius, who was a Roman emperor and a philosopher, he said, "A man's life is what his thoughts make it." Men and women, of course. 400 years ago, Shakespeare said, "Nothing is good or bad, but thinking makes it so." And 150 years ago, Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "A man is what he thinks about all day long." Once again, men and women. And I could spend hours repeating quotes like these, every single one of them saying the same thing going back thousands of years. The life we live, the experiences we have, the cause of whatever happens to us in our life is a direct result and a perfect reflection of our deepest thoughts, beliefs, and opinions. That's what it means. In other words, if something is showing up out there in our life, in the physical world, in our experience, you can bet that it is already very well established in here in what we call our consciousness. And if something we want in our life is not showing up out there in our life, it's not because God doesn't want us to have it. It's because we have not yet created it in here. We have not yet created the image, the mental equivalent, the inner something that will become the exterior. But something I do want to point out, and I haven't talked about this much this month, so I want to bring it out today. Even though we talk a lot about using our mind, we're not talking about brain power here. This is not a matter of choosing the mental over the spiritual, of emphasizing the head over the heart. It takes both. Anybody who says that this is a purely intellectual teaching does not understand it. Does not understand it. Because Dr. Holmes says we are creatures of thought and emotion. Our thought give our the direction of our life, and the emotions give it the power, the passion for life that we have. Both aspects are important. But the biggest problem relating to religion throughout history, if you look at the difference between spirituality and religion, as I talked about in the first week, the biggest problem in traditional religion is not that there has not been enough emotion attached to it. There's been plenty of emotion, both good emotion and not so good emotion. The problem has been that there has not been nearly enough intelligent, logical, rational thinking applied to all that emotional energy. That's why we need both. That's what allows religious fanaticism to be abused, misdirected, and manipulated when there is no intelligence attached to the emotion. Now, granted, when we feel this oneness with spirit, this bliss that we see these pilgrims in Mecca and the people at the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem and all that, when we see them experiencing this, we know that it's a powerful experience. But applying that spiritual energy to our daily life in a practical, intelligent way requires a certain amount of good sense. Now, that requires us to think, which is good because, contrary to popular opinion, rational thought should not be a threat to religion. It should not be a threat to religion. In fact, rational thought should make any intelligent religion or philosophy even stronger. Because the ability to think clearly and the ability to make intelligent choices are two of our greatest spiritual gifts. That's why we have to be clear that this teaching is not about freeing ourselves from some power out there. It's not about trying to do everything alone through brain power. Whenever we create in our life, as Dr. Holmes tells us in The Science of Mind, and we're always creating either by choice or by default, whenever we are creating, we are actually using our mental resources, our God-given ability to think and make choices combined with our passion for life as part of a spiritual process. Because we believe that any creator that was able to put this amazing universe together has to be not only intelligent, it has to be the source of all intelligence. So the creative process that's going on all the time in our lives and in the world has to be the intelligent activity of spirit forever involved in the process of making all things new. And it does so through us as we make intelligent use of what we call the science of mind, which is what we're talking about here. We don't have to spend our life searching for someone or something willing to fulfill our spiritual needs. We don't have to look for something or somebody to save us. We don't have to try and find a God who is willing to heal us. And we don't have to beg for or try to earn a better life than the one we're living now. We don't have to do any of those things. But what we do need to do is to learn how to create these things for ourselves. To create these things for ourselves, individually and collectively. Because everything we need, once again, not just us personally, but all of us together, everything we need to live well, to love well, and to heal whatever it is in our life that needs to be healed, it's already ours. It's already ours. It's already here. That's what the kingdom of heaven is at hand actually means. We just need to become aware of it. But we also need to learn the process that allows us to pull all of the things together that we need. So once we learn to change the way that we think and feel on a regular basis about God, about ourselves, about the world, about all these things, and about the co-creative relationship between us, then we can start enjoying our life as this lean, mean creativity machine. That's kind of what we are. You know, it's what we've always been, and it is what we're always going to be. But before we can do this, before we can create in our lives at will, which is what we're talking about here, we've got a few dysfunctional beliefs that we need to change. You see, too many people in the world see themselves as victims of circumstance, as cogs in this giant machine, as puppets controlled by their past and by the situations that surround them. In other words, they are living reactively instead of proactively. They are reacting to the world instead of shaping it or consciously creating it. So what we need to understand and to remember is that we are the means by which God expresses and creates life in the world. And it does so marvelously in the world at large, whether we choose to live that way or not. It will do it through us, it will do it around us, it will do it with us, or it will do it in spite of us. It just won't necessarily do it to us or for us, because the choice is ours and ours alone. God doesn't make our choices for us. It gives us what we expect. So we can refuse to accept our good. We can deny it. We can close our eyes and claim we don't see it. I see people doing that every day. But we can't change the nature of this power that's always there, ready to give us our heart's desire. All we can affect is how much of that good we are ready and willing to accept. So what this means is we don't have to spend any time or any energy trying to change God's mind. All we need to do is to focus on changing ours, to focus on changing ours, which makes perfect sense if you think about it, because if our experiences are going to come from our ideas, then we need to figure out how to give this law of mind some real first-class material to work with. Or another way of saying it is, we need to start filling our mind on a regular basis with some ideas that are actually worth manifesting. Now think about it this way. How many chocoholics do I have out there? Have I got a few? Is there anybody who's not? Okay, there's a couple. Not many, a few though, but okay, I am. So you can take the greatest chocolatier in the world. Isn't that a great title, a chocolatier? What do you do? I make chocolate. Ooh, they didn't tell me that one, you know, when I was in high school for college. Anyway, majoring in chocolate, I like that. You can take the greatest chocolatier in the world. You can set him or her up in a fabulous shop with all the best equipment, and then when she's ready to go to work, you can bring her some moldy cocoa, some old rancid butter, and no sugar, and say, here you go, go to it. It doesn't matter how talented she is. What she creates out of that kind of low-quality raw material is not going to be something you want to give to your sweetie on Valentine's Day, all right? But if I bring to her this incredible, rich, dark chocolate cocoa and fresh cream and fresh butter and wonderful cane sugar, perfect sugar, just sweet as could be, and I give her these things, then she's going to make something out of that that's probably going to curl your toes, like they make in Brussels or in Switzerland or these other places. Now, that same principle holds true in our life. What kind of raw material are we putting into our consciousness with our reading and the people around us, the books, the movies, all of these things? Because that old computer phrase that we learned a long time ago, garbage in, garbage out, is also an excellent metaphysical statement that we need to apply. You see, sometimes we forget that this isn't about using your mind or my mind or God's mind, because there's only one mind. We are all using the one intelligence that exists everywhere. We are all an inseparable part of this thing we call life. So what we're talking about using here is a spiritual law called the law of mind. It's a spiritual process that applies to our thoughts at every level, from the moment when an idea pops into our head all the way to the physical manifestation, when our idea shows up fully formed in our experience. It's the process of deliberately drawing an idea from where all ideas come from, the source of all ideas, and examining that idea and choosing to either release it or to nurture it, and then putting all the power and passion of our belief behind that idea to make it real. Now, this is a point, let me inject this, where someone says, well, if God is the source of all ideas, does that mean that God is also the source of bad ideas? And that's an excellent question, but the answer is No, no more than the sun is the cause of nighttime or light is the cause of dark. But sometimes it seems that way. What we have to understand is that sometimes we can have a perfectly good idea that we use in an imperfect way. People do it all the time. We can create a wonderful relationship with all the love available to us that we can imagine and screw it up in all sorts of different ways. Trust me, I've covered a bunch of them, okay? We can attract lots of money into our life and we can waste it in all sorts of ways or throw it away. We are born with this incredible body, but we can and do abuse our health on a regular basis. In fact, in the case of our physical body, a lot of people are attracted to this teaching because of physical issues. An illness or a breakdown is usually not just a physical problem. It is frequently a mental and a spiritual problem. I was reading an interview with a doctor who had decided to put all of his efforts into metaphysical healing, into mental healing, though he had been a physical healer for many, many years. And when the interviewer asked him why he did that, he said, "Some patients I see are actually draining into their bodies the diseased thoughts of their mind." They're draining into their bodies the diseased thoughts of their mind. We do that in every area of our life. So this is a principle that contains all possibility, but it only shows up in our experience as a reflection of our own beliefs about our own possibilities and capabilities. Once again, garbage in and garbage out. Now, I've had people come in here who come for a couple weeks and they decide to leave. And I think one of the reasons that some people have so much trouble getting deeply involved with this teaching is that the only person that you can do some real practical work on also happens to be the most stubborn, the most argumentative, and the most difficult person you will ever know. And that person is, guess who? It's you, or in my case, it's me. Which raises an interesting question. Why do we have so much trouble helping ourselves, doing things that we know are good for us? Well, for one thing, one of the reasons we have trouble is you're the only one who knows in your life all of the rationalizations and all of the justifications for why your life is such a mess. You've got your reasons. You alone, and in my life I know, all the pain that you insist on hanging on to and the guilt and the resentment that you have all sorts of reasons not to let go of, and you know and I know all of the excuses that we use to keep putting off all the things we need to do that we need to do to create the life that we want. Now, I'll tell you this. It's obvious, but I want to say it out loud. As a practitioner and counselor for a number of years, I have found that it is much easier to see the solutions to other people's problems than it is to see the solutions to mine. Have you noticed that? Other people have problems because they are thinking incorrectly. I have problems because the world is against me, okay? That's the difference, all right? Remember that statement, there are none so blind but those who will not see? That's what we're doing. Now, Dr. Holmes's greatest contribution to the spiritual wisdom of the world is something that he called spiritual mind treatment. Ruth alluded to it earlier. Now, the name is a little strange, I'll grant you that, but the concept of spiritual mind treatment, or what we call treatment for short, is extremely powerful. It's not a ritual, it's not a sacrament. All it is, and I mean all it is a mental and spiritual tool. It's a technique he developed that allows the person who uses it consciously to get their mind and their heart more in tune with this power that creates everything in our life. And I'm not going to spend any time this morning going through it because we've got books, we've got classes, we've got practitioners, ministers who'll be happy to talk to you about it. That's what we have after every single service. And you can look up all the information for the people you need on the website and everywhere else. The point I want to get across this morning in this final talk of the four is that the consciousness behind the treatment is more important than the words we use. The consciousness, the inner knowing behind it, is more important than the words, far more important. Because intelligent prayer, which is what treatment is, it's prayer, is not about impressing God. It's not about impressing other people. It's about making an impression on our own consciousness, and then allowing that impression to take hold. It's about having and maintaining faith in a better idea. So it's partly about perseverance. It's about constantly moving in the direction of our greater good, no matter what doubts and fears try to get in the way. It's about being able to visualize a greater possibility, a better experience, even when we can't see it yet. Knowing that once a belief is firmly embedded in our consciousness, it has to show up in our life. It has to. That's why Thomas Troward, one of the great influences on Dr. Holmes, he wrote in the early 1900s, and one of his great statements that I love is, once an idea is held firmly enough in consciousness, the means to bring it about have already been set in motion. Once an idea is held firmly in our consciousness, everything we need to make it happen has already been set in motion. It's right out there in front of us, ready for us to recognize it. So if you believe that there's value in what we've been talking about these 4 weeks, and if you like this idea of a God who's always supporting you, if you like the idea that you are the way that God works in your life and that this power will do anything you need, that's great. If you're that far, then you are now standing in the doorway of a fabulous new life experience far beyond anything you would ever know. But if you would like to cross the threshold, which is the next step after standing in the doorway, there's one more thing that you have to do. And this is true whether you have been coming here for years or whether you're here for the first time. Besides thinking more intelligently about God and thinking more highly about ourselves as the way that God works, we have to make a commitment. Not a commitment to God, not a commitment to this community. Nobody has to testify. You know, we don't do any of that stuff here. We simply need to make a commitment, okay, which is a promise. That's all it is. A covenant, if you will, with ourselves to think about life in the best way we possibly can all the time. All the time. You go, well, that doesn't sound too hard. Yeah, right. Okay. All the time. Wherever we are, whatever we are doing, whomever we are with, whatever's going on around us, we need to expect the best and to accept it when it offers itself, when it shows up. That's the yardstick that we need to use to measure anything we decide to do or not to do in our life from here on out. My teacher, Kennedy Schultz, many of you knew him, Dr. Kennedy Schultz, once said on this very stage, behind this very podium, he said, most religions are getting you ready to die. This one is getting you ready to live. This one's getting you ready to live. So I guess the question is, are we ready to live? And what are we willing to do to make that happen? Now, some people get into class and they go, okay, is this going to be hard? All right. Is this going to take a lot of effort and energy and all this other stuff? And the answer is, that depends. That depends. Because if we really and truly want to make some major changes in our life, we're probably not going to do it without a little bit of inconvenience. Because most of us have spent a lot of years living with some extremely misguided or even self-destructive ideas firmly entrenched in our mind. Now, they weren't original with us, maybe. Maybe we got them from somebody else, but it doesn't matter. We're the ones who kept them. And when we start replacing these old familiar ideas with better ideas, it may feel a little uncomfortable. It may even feel a little unnatural. But if we stick with it, it will start to feel empowering. It'll start to feel liberating because we'll be taking our place as creative spiritual beings in our own life. You know, you could have a brand new Lexus or Mercedes or Prius, you know, got to keep the green thing in here, in your garage. You could have it in your garage or your driveway. It could be bought and paid for, a gift, all gassed up and ready to go. But if you don't learn how to drive it, or if you don't get in the driver's seat and turn it on, it's not going to do you any good. It might as well be a 3,000-pound paperweight sitting in your garage. That's all the good it's going to do. This teaching needs to be more than books on your nightstand. All right? It needs to be more than books on your nightstand. It cannot do anything for you if you don't make an effort to learn how to use it and then act on a regular basis on what you have learned. You know, we spend a lot of our time on a daily basis, surrounded by a world that tells us we are weak, that tells us that we have to be careful because there's danger all around, a world that fears our, that feeds our fears and our negativity. So it takes constant, focused, and deeply dedicated attention to a better way of thinking to keep us mentally, emotionally, and spiritually in balance. That's why we need to take the time every single day to examine what's in our mind and to weed our mind just like we would weed a flower bed. I mean, if we are too busy to spend 15 minutes a day focusing on our own spiritual well-being and our own mental clarity, then the truth is we're too busy. We're just too busy. And something needs to change, probably our priorities, because any child knows that a flower is not pulled out of the ground by nature. All right? It's not. It grows because of an inner force that is always acting in it, and it will grow through 4 inches of concrete if it has to. In the same way, the answer to our prayers, the solution to our problems, the realization of our dreams doesn't come from out there. It's not going to be drawn out of us by someone else. It has to come from in here. So it's up to us to consciously create a lifestyle that allows us to listen for the answers that we seek part of every day. So that means taking the time to meditate and pray on a regular basis. It means being around healthy-minded people and releasing the unhealthy ones with great love and good riddance, okay? It means learning how to see the good in the world when everyone else is looking for the bad. It means choosing thoughts over and over and over again that take us in the right direction and exercising emotions in our life that positively support our best thoughts and beliefs, joy instead of fear. All right, that kind of a thing. That means it's up to us to deliberately learn more about how this power works in our life so that we can make sure that every aspect of our life includes at least some sense of the sacred. Sacred's a good word. We need to have a part of our life that is dedicated to the sacred awareness of who and what we are. And if we do just that much, you will be amazed at how your life changes, because we are spiritual beings having a human experience in a world made of God. That is what we are. That is how we are meant to live. And this is the only way that we are ever going to heal any conflict, disease, or any other desirable experience in our life or in the world. Now, that's all you need to know. These 4 weeks, what I told you. You've got it. Better idea of God, better idea of you, and a better idea of the world. So over the next 11 months, until we come to January once again, that's all I'm going to be talking about, those same principles. Now, we'll break it down into smaller pieces. We'll have nuance. We'll apply it to current events and things like that. We'll look at all the reasons why we don't do the things we know we need to do and how we create what we want to create. But if you do nothing more than take the ideas that we've talked about these 4 weeks and you practice them, practice, 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 I promise that once you do step through the doorway that faces you today, which is the doorway to the rest of your life, and it's there every single moment, if you do that, you'll never look back. You'll never look back. You won't have to look back, because the path that this doorway will be leading you to is going to be taking you exactly where you want to go. This is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine, and so it is, and so it is. Thank you. All right. All right, let's take a deep breath or two, relax for a moment here, and simply know something. Let us know, first of all there is God. It is a spiritual world. It is constantly being created through thought, emotion. It is a spiritual world becoming physical. So as we recognize that everything that exists is God the invisible becoming God the visible, we have a new perspective on the world. We recognize that the invisible becomes the visible in our life through our thoughts and emotions. We are the ones who make the choices in our life, and we can change them whenever we want. That is all we need to know. The choices are available to us. We can choose love over hatred or apathy. We can choose joy over pain and suffering. We can choose possibility over limitation. Those choices are always there for us, but we have to decide what to choose. And as we choose and we take our best choice and we begin to treat it like something precious and we begin to nurture it and follow in that direction no matter what comes up around us, we begin to see it grow and blossom in our life. We begin to see greater things happen. Love expands, prosperity expands, health unfolds, success appears. And it is not always easy. Sometimes we are confronted by the drama that grabs our attention and pulls fear from us, but we have the power to back away and say, no, this is the truth. I know the truth in my life. I am the perfect idea in the mind of a creative God, and I am the creative power in my life being expressed as me. This is my truth, and this is what I know. So I invite you now to take anything in your life that you want to change. One thing. Simply place it at the center of your consciousness. Look at it for a moment. Smile. Say thank you for the lessons that this thing has taught you, whether it's an illness, a relationship, a work problem, a money problem, whatever it is, look at it instead of a problem, look at it as a gift. Say thank you, accept the lesson, and release it, because the lesson is learned. Recognize that you are now creating in your life something greater than the thing that was pulling you away from your spiritual center. Take these few moments for yourself in silence. With gratitude for this awareness and a clear understanding of its sacred significance in our life, we now recognize the power that is ours to use, the ability to see beyond the appearance and create something new and greater than was ever there before. This is our gift. We accept it with thanks, with a deep appreciation for all that we have been given and all that we have yet to give. This is now our truth. Not just the way we think or the way we feel, but the way we live. Our every life experience is now flowing with this awareness. And with gratitude, we release it. We release it, letting it be the truth in our life, accepting it, practicing it, enjoying it, and releasing it into consciousness, knowing it is so for us now and always, and so it is.